Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Husker Hall of Famer, number 44, number 56, Coach DeJour, Jay Foreman. What's up, Jay?
Hey, what's going on, man?
This little thing called the NFL Draft. What'd you think?
I think I'm a little surprised by, you know, Jacksonville jumping up there like that. But, you know, I think if there's ever a surefire player in this year's draft, at least from an impact standpoint, both on and off the field, is definitely Travis Hunter. So, and then obviously the big news is obviously Shador not getting drafted, and also Dallas Cowboys going up and trying to repair their interior offensive line and not address the skill positions and trying to surround Dak with as many weapons as possible. So the draft is a draft, and obviously, you know, Pittsburgh was probably a landing spot for Shador, and they decided to go defensive tackle to try to get a replacement for Cam Hayward. But teams are telling on themselves and letting you know what their future and immediate and future plans are by just definitely how they drafted last night.
Let's just start toward the top of the draft. Obviously, Cam Ward goes number one. And then the trade, Jay, between the Jaguars and the Browns. I think that we heard some chatter about some trades in the top five. Not sure that's the one that I was expecting. We heard a lot of Ashton Jeanty to Jacksonville at five. But the Jags make the move to go trade up for Travis Hunter. On the one hand, you get it for Jacksonville, whether he plays receiver or defensive back. Seems like that's going to be a good pick, probably worth it for them. But then Cleveland kind of stops there. They stop at five. They don't keep trading down. Mason Graham's probably worth it. I mean, top defensive tackle on pretty much everyone's board, a good player in his own right. I'm a little surprised that Cleveland didn't keep trading and keep stockpiling assets with even more of a look toward the future, when they can be really aggressive in whether they get a quarterback, you know, to start the draft in the next hour or so, or if they're, you know, just saving picks to compile to make a move up next year's draft board if they have to. Not a bad pick by Cleveland by any means, but I'm surprised I didn't see more activity out of the Browns on the trade market.
Yeah, they could have got I think Mason Graham is definitely the real deal, but I think, you know, probably, you know, you're picking really, really peach fuzz here to say, difference between him and Walter Nolan and a couple other guys, and you could have got really the up and emerging defensive tackle from Kent State maybe in the top of the second round, and like you said, accumulate some draft picks. And then if they're going to pick a quarterback here at the very beginning of the second round, then everything looks all good. But for a team that has plenty of holes in the roster, and running back is not one of them because it's such a deep running back class. But you're thinking offensive line, you're thinking offensive pass rusher from Myles Garrett. You're going to have to really restock that defensive backfield. You could have really went 2-for-1 and then kept your top of the second round pick. So they got to get a quarterback, and it'd be interesting to see if they pull the trigger on Shador Sanders or wait. And if they do wait, then you think Tyler Plow comes in late in the second round and they're going to have to trade back up for that. But if they, you know, really at this point, you know, it was obviously a concerted, a true effort for the NFL and evaluators to try to humble Shador Sanders. And I don't think it's really a bad, I think he's more humble than people give him credit for, but also I think they're trying to give a little bit of reality check. But the problem is he potentially could go to a better place than he actually would have been drafted if he went in the first round. So when you compare Cleveland maybe to New York, which is probably apples for apples, two coaches in the hot season along with the GM, but, you know, Cleveland is probably a little bit more equipped to make a run as far as, you know, a little bit better defense and a running game, so forth and so on. So it'll be interesting to see what Cleveland does, considering that everybody in that division is moving forward and upward, you know, at a rapid pace. The only team that maybe they figure that they've caught is Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh doesn't have a quarterback. And even if it tells me that there's probably more tread on the tire with Aaron Rodgers, a kind of gentleman's agreement, than, you know, has been led on. But ultimately, you know, you got a 41, 42-year-old quarterback that didn't look good even when healthy last year, even though you have two receivers and you potentially, you heard him going to trade Pickens. So now you got DK Metcalf all the way across the country trying to be a number one receiver after getting paid with a aging and older quarterback that's set in his ways. Doesn't seem that it's probably a good, you know, I guess, recipe for success, but we shall see.
More surprising pick, Ashton Jeanty at 6 to the Raiders or Teteroa McMillan to the Panthers at number 8?
I would say McMillan, you know, to the Panthers at number 8, even though I liked him all year. Mm-hmm. It's funny because Steve Smith has been his biggest critic, and now he's going to see him front and center there in Carolina. I like him. I think he has enough separation, you know, to get, to get open for early in his career for quarterbacks, you know, older quarterback or veteran quarterback or a rookie or a veteran quarterback, excuse me. But then also I like his ability to catch 50-50 balls, and that's what you're going to be doing a lot of times in the NFL. In that big frame, 6'4", 212, 215, can run. I like him. And also he has a lot of growth potential as well. So I like the pick. Carolina has smaller receivers. I know they picked the South Carolina receiver a couple years ago, Leggett, but I don't think he's the number one. I think he has number one skills, mm-hmm. like as far as height, weight, speed. Mindset isn't there. But then also when you have a smaller quarterback, you need bigger receivers. They have two of them that are big in Leggett and then obviously McMillan. And so it should prove success this year for Bryce Young.
We had some people on the text line before, Jay, some Raiders fans, a little worried about the Ashton Jeanty pick. They thought the Raiders in year one under Pete Carroll could have or should have gone on the offensive line route. And, of course, right behind the Raiders, there's a little bit of a run on offensive line with Mamboo going the very next pick. Will Campbell was right before them. Kelvin Banks Jr., Tyler Booker on the offensive line. Would you think the Raiders went with some good sound, at least process and thought process, in going with Ashton Jeanty for the first pick of the Pete Carroll era?
Yeah, I think it lets you know Pete Carroll feels like their offensive line was a little bit better than what people give him credit for. And you look at Pete Carroll and his success up in Seattle, what they do. They had Marshawn Lynch, more than capable quarterback. You know, Geno Smith, he helped resurrect his career. Then you got, like Myers and a bunch of complimentary receivers down there. And they're probably going to look to receiver and offensive line the next two picks after quarterback. But I also think it's a good pick, is the best pick, because it's sometimes when you have, I wouldn't say Jeanty slip, but just a trade up there in the top five, you got to take the best available. I think they thought Jeanty was going to be gone, and you can't pass up a talent like that because his ability to make guys miss, which then will make your offensive line better, and then ability to be effective in and out of the pass game, let you know that he's going to be, you know, a 1,000-yard rusher, 400 or 500-yard receiver. And a guy that can be a bell cow here for the next 4 or 5 years.
Another team that really interested me was the Atlanta Falcons. They take Jalen Walker at number 15 out of Georgia. And then, Jay, they trade back into the first round at number 26 to take James Pierce Jr. from Tennessee, who before the year was in the conversation to go 1-1. He might have slipped all the way to the second round, but the Falcons weren't going to let that happen. They gave up a lot to go back into the first round and pick up James Pierce Jr. And according to some draft charts, they actually ended up spending more capital with what they traded away to get James Pierce Jr. at 26 than they did to get Jalen Walker at 15. With the Falcons going and getting these two edge guys, what does that tell you about what the Falcons think about where that team is at?
Well, they think their offense is ready, set, go. And, you know, I think they got Jeff Ulbrich down there as a defensive coordinator, then Raheem Morris, and they feel like, with James Pierce Jr., I mean, his athletic ability and actually his production lends to a top five pick. I mean, he's just flat out dominant, you know, by the way of Charlotte, North Carolina. So they feel like their locker room, their structure will get the best out of James Pierce Jr. And then also you got the two bookends now for the future and Walker and Pierce Jr. So I think they're trying to, it lets you know what they're trying to do on defense. They're trying to destroy everybody's quarterback in that division. You got two guys that are going to go out there and hunt. They feel, they let you know, they feel very comfortable with their quarterback position, which I don't personally. They feel really good with London and Pitts and everywhere else, and obviously, and at the running back position and in the skill position. So it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward. When you give up a lot of I call them complimentary picks, high complimentary picks, to get back in the first round, you got to hit on that dude, because if you don't, I think it's Terry Fontenot. Now, you look, you took some heat for signing Kirk Cousins to a $100 million contract, and then you draft Michael Penix, and you had to call the owner and explain what you're doing. Now this is the second year in a row and the second draft in a row. The owner's giving you the stink eye. Now you better start getting this Atlanta Falcons team going towards the playoffs, or you're pretty soon won't have a job.
The Falcons trade back into the first round, as do the New York Giants. And, of course, Jay, this involves a couple of former franchises of yours. Let's go ahead and start with the Houston Texans aspect of this one. They only had this one pick in the first round at number 25. They trade out of the first round. You said they should have been looking pretty offensive line heavy, and not long after the Giants make their pick, Josh Connerly Jr., the offensive tackle, comes off the board. Then last pick of the first round, Josh Simmons comes off the board, another left tackle type there. What do you make of Houston's decision to allow the Giants back into the first round and forego making a first-round pick themselves?
Yeah, well, man, you know, well, first of all, you double went out of the first round because you traded away Laremy Tunsil. So
true.
You didn't get his replacement, and you didn't have anybody, like, you know, in the wing, waiting in the wing. Now, it also tells me that they didn't feel comfortable with Simmons coming off an injury, which I disagree with. I think he's the best offensive tackle if healthy. You got to expect him to come back, because it wasn't something that the degenerative and wasn't projected to hold him back, or else Kansas City wouldn't have drafted him. And then the offensive tackle from, Oregon, Connerly, I didn't really like him, so I understand it. Now, the better question is, who do they have their eye on that they said now? Cesario said they had their eye on at 25 and still available. That will tell you a lot more, because that will tell you what their idea of, I'm assuming it's an offensive lineman, what type of offensive line and offensive lineman that they're looking for, not only in the present time, but in the future. Because you trade away a bookend in Laremy Tunsil, and you allow the Commanders to draft another tackle, and you have nobody, and you probably had definitely had the worst offensive line of all the playoff teams, and one of the most poorest offensive lines in the whole NFL.
Just looking at ESPN's best available list on the offensive line, Jay, at tackle, it's Ariante Ursary, who Nebraska's seen up close and personal from Minnesota. Big old dude, Ozzy Trapilo from Boston College, who sat out of the Pinstripe Bowl. You look at Emory Jones from LSU, Ajani Cornelius from Oregon in that mix. At guard, it's Sevenea from Arizona, Tate Ratledge from Georgia, Marcus Bowe from Purdue. And then at center, if that's the way the Texans want to go, it's Jared Wilson, Seth McLaughlin, and Drew Kendall as the top three. Now, again, more bites at the apple is usually better in the NFL draft. You don't want to pick a guy just because you have a need if you don't think he's a good enough value. But for a team like the Texans, they better hope that some of these offensive linemen are available with all these picks that they have. Otherwise, it's going to be a real head-scratcher come fall camp.
Yeah, because, you might have liked him at 25, but and he's still there, but it depends. Your projections better be right, and the projections are only based on how the draft is right now.
Yeah.
If I had to bet, I think it's the big man from Minnesota. I think he had a really good Senior Bowl. I think he's a great athlete. He's a huge human being. You start him out at left tackle, see how he does, projecting the blind side, especially, essentially you're spending a first-round pick on him, because if you get two twos for him, or a two and a three is equivalent to the first, and you have to hit on him, so the pressure's on. And then also I like Ratcliffe as the guard from Georgia. I think he's sturdy. I think he knows how to protect, and he can provide a punch in the run game. Now, I will say this. Even though Houston Texans' offensive line was not very good in pass protection, yet Joe Mixon, which, again, he's like Genty, he will make an average offensive line look good, a good offensive line look great. So I don't think the pressure is on to get somebody in the run game. You have to get somebody that can protect. And I think you need to get two linemen, protect C.J. Stroud, both front side and back side.
The flip side of that trade then, Jay, is who came back into the first round. It was the New York Giants kind of pulling off the reverse Texans from a couple years ago. New York takes Abdul Carter up there at number three, their version of Will Anderson. But they trade back into the first round with the Houston Texans.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
To take Jackson Dart, make him the second quarterback off the board. Your thoughts on that move by the New York Football Giants?
Yeah, I think Abdul Carter was a good pick for them. It's kind of it's going to be interesting how he fits in because they got Brian Burns and then they got
Thibodeau.
Thibodeau, who they drafted in high in the first round a few years ago from Oregon, that's been pretty productive. Both of them have actually. So, but the more pass rushes you can have, and he gives you flexibility. Abdul Carter, I'm talking about rushing from the second level as well. But when you draft him number three, he even said he wants to wear 56, which is a huge mistake. You're not that good, at least not yet. But I'll give him a pass to the excitement. I think he's a no-brainer pick. Now, when you're thinking about Jackson Dart, I don't think he's. As a matter of fact, the reason why I know he's not better than Shador is because Brian Daboll already told you Russell Wilson is going to be the starter and Jameis is going to be the backup. So essentially, you're hoping and banking that he develops, trains, and then also seizes the opportunity to be a future franchise quarterback, even though Brian Daboll and company might not be there. Now, that lets you know that that pick had maybe came from the top. But I will say this, once you start to hear Jackson Dart's name start to kind of trickle in there, either, you know, obviously recently, but, you know, a couple, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and being connected possibly to Brian Daboll, who liked him because of his ability to, a little bit more athletic than Shador, you knew a team was going to take him. Now, the thing that is a little bit worrisome, in the big game, he didn't play well. He had 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And that's the opposite for Shador. And Shador even played really well when Travis Hunter got knocked out against Colorado State a couple years ago. So, you know, it's a byproduct of, you know, the situation is a byproduct of the eyes of the beholder. I think Brian Daboll has done a really good job with, you know, I think he did a good job at times with Daniel Jones. I also think he did an excellent job with Josh Allen. That's what he likes. That's what he's been successful at. So Jackson Dart fits it. But I also will say this. Jameis Winston is the pocket quarterback. So maybe it was like, okay, well, we got one pocket quarterback. Russell Wilson is more of a pocket quarterback right now. Let me get me something that's more, you know, up my alley, even though they cut Daniel Jones last year after about 5 or 6 weeks.
We're talking with Jay Foreman, Husker Hall of Famer, here on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Jay, let's turn the floor over to you for one of your other teams. The Buffalo Bills take Maxwell Hairston out of Kentucky with the 30th pick. Dude can absolutely fly. What do you think about Buffalo going with a corner?
Right. Well, I think, hey, if you're a good corner, Buffalo's going to take you, man. I don't know how many corners the Buffalo they took in the last 10 years, but they love their corners up there. And that lets you know Sean McDermott is definitely going to – he's almost like a bootleg version of Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer is always drafted defense in Minnesota, and everybody was mad. The difference is that Sean McDermott has been winning and obviously winning the division and going deep in the playoffs. And so you got to – replenish it. Unfortunately, with the Lazarius White, you know, he kind of injury plagued, even though they brought him back after a quick stint there in Baltimore, in Dallas. You need to make sure you have a 2 lockdown corner. Hairston can fly. He started to come on, and if you saw him at the Senior Bowl, he was just flat out a lockdown corner, and that's what you need. And that's what I think when you're thinking about this, even though Kansas City didn't win it last year, everything that Buffalo's been, it will do is draft to beat Kansas City. Now they have to really, really think about, even though they signed Shabazz to a pretty big contract, and I know they got Coleman. If they could really hit on a receiver in the second, third, or fourth round, or one of their next 2 or 3 picks, and he ends up developing into a Stephon Diggs-ish, right? Stephon Diggs is a 5th round pick. You're going to see Buffalo really, really challenge Kansas City to be able to make some plays late in the game and get over the hump.
I'm glad you brought the Chiefs up here, Jay, because that's where I wanted to go with you next. To the Chiefs, but also to, I think, the Eagles and the Ravens. Between those three of the organizations that have done probably the most consistent job of hitting on draft picks pretty consistently, because it seems like these teams, they do their homework, they don't underthink it, but they also don't overthink it, right? Baltimore has Malachi Starks fall into their lap. They get a pair of him with Kyle Hamilton, which I think is going to be fantastic. The Eagles and Chiefs essentially swap places, and the Chiefs pick up a 5th as the Eagles take Jahad Campbell, who had a top 15 grade from a lot of people. And the Chiefs weren't concerned in the same vein that you were about Josh Simmons' kneecap injury. So they get maybe the best offensive tackle on the board coming into the year, all the way down at number 32. That's how these good teams stay good, is they make the simple decisions. They don't overthink it. They use a lot of common sense. I really like all three of those picks for those franchises.
Yeah, there's a reason why they're always in the hunt. And what do? Every player that they draft, it's the mold of what they view as a good football player, period. They don't overthink it, and they don't think about what you can't do. They think about everything that you can do and what you bring on and off the field. You look at Sark, right? The biggest thing when they put his name up there, character, leader. He's already a crazy athlete, and he's already one of the best safeties out there. What do you need for the Ravens to play in the Ravens? You got to be tough. You got to have a good character, and you got to be a leader and a playmaker. And they go opposites, right? Where now you're thinking about Hamilton's going to be able to reign free even more. But then backside, you got to, where Baltimore ran into a little bit of trouble, especially against Kansas City and other teams, you know, over the last few years, is communication on the back end and playmaking ability. Well, you just got that. Well, then you look at Simmons, right? And Andy Reid, a former offensive lineman himself, obviously, by the way, his body looks, and then obviously offensive line coach himself, and he's done an excellent job of finding guys who people overlook, but then developing them, and he knows what to look for in his offensive linemen. And if you want to make Patrick Mahomes happy, you get the best offensive lineman in the draft. And then Philly, listen, you know, I know if Walker or one of the other linebackers from Georgia was available, they would have picked him. But you couldn't get any better than Deion Campbell because he I know he had a top 15 grade. He had if it was me, I would have picked him in the top 8. He can do it all. And the only reason that he played stack linebackers is because they had two really good pass rushers on the outside. He developed into the best inside linebacker in the nation. And then he still had 6 or 7 sacks. And he ran a 4.5, and he's 6'3", 235. So when you fit him in with, you know, assuming Nolan Smith gets, you know, back from his injury, Nakobe Dean, you got Zach Bond coming back, mm-hmm. and then you got the two big horses in the middle. And you got a guy that can erase things at the second level with like Cooper DeJean and Mikal Mitchell that they drafted last year, and all those guys. Philly's right back in. They're right back in business. The way that you're able to be successful when you pay your offensive stars or defensive stars money is that you don't overthink the draft and you think people, not positions. Every one of these guys are high character guys. They're tough. They love football. And they're getting drafted at value because all of them are the best at their position. And it's just that everybody else was trying to hit on positions that necessarily weren't there. They said, listen, we're just going to take the best guy and trust the process. And that's what they've done.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up the name Zach Bond because, Jay, the Eagles re-signed him that 3-year, $51 million deal. 34 mil of that was guaranteed. If the Eagles had known Jahad Campbell was going to fall to them, I wonder if they would have re-signed Zach Bond. Not to say he wasn't deserving, right? I mean, he balled out for him this year, right? Best year of his career, and you like continuity. But that's just what the Eagles do, is they wait for a good player to fall into their lap, and they take them. And I think that Jahad Campbell, number one, you know, has a great guy to learn behind in Zach Bond if he's still going to play kind of that stack linebacker, like you said. Or on the flip side, if Jahad Campbell's really good from the get-go, Zach Bond can get Philly a lot back in a trade.
Well, yeah, and that's only like next year. But here's the thing. Zach Bond and Jahad Campbell give you position flexibility. So you add not only one player, you add actually two more. So there's four guys there. Both of them can play stack linebacker and be effective, right? And they can play together because they play differently. So they can play that. Then you throw in Nakobe Dean. Now you have size, speed, playmaking ability, and you don't have to change your personnel. Zach Bond and Campbell can provide pass rush, both in like delayed blitzes or direct blitzes. So you really don't have to think about trading any of them because Nakobe Dean and Jahad Campbell are on the cheap. Now, maybe Nakobe Dean gets on the move because he came back late in the year from an injury, and then the backup linebacker played really well in the Super Bowl who came over from San Francisco, right? And so when you think about it, Philly is added. You can't – here's what Philly's thinking. I said, man, we hit on all the other drafts. These dummies let one of the best defenders in the nation fall right to us. We have to take him. Look, Austin, the problems that Philly is worrying about right now, are called first world problems. I got too many good players that are going to be great that love football. They all the same. They're all in guys that are invested. They all love the game. They all come from good programs. They're all winners. That's why Philly's going to probably be right in the mix again, as long as everything stays on the up and up and they get, you know, have their minds right and invested into trying to be back-to-back champs.
I put my patience on display here, Jay, but I have to ask before we let you get back on the road. Tyler Warren to Indianapolis. My thoughts on this before you go. On the positive, I do think that it's a good fit for both player and team. I think Indianapolis' staff is creative enough offensively to leverage a lot of what Tyler Warren does well, to be creative with him and not just pigeonhole him as a true, you know, inline tight end. I think they're creative enough. I think he's talented enough split out that Indy will find ways to maximize him. And I do think that it makes a lot of sense. But let's not pretend like Shane Steichen's not on the hot seat and that there could be a new coach coming in the next couple of years, certainly before Tyler Warren's rookie contract is up, if things don't go the way Indy needs them to at the quarterback position. And I just worry that if that comes to pass, that trying to make Tyler Warren, you know, a true tight end, a prototypical tight end, isn't where he's best. Obviously, Colston Loveland was off the board. And I'm not upset by the Colts taking Tyler Warren. I'm pretty happy with him. I mean, dude's a baller. Go watch his highlights. And I love a lot of what he brings to the table. But there's a part of me that wonders if Colston Loveland wasn't more of a plug-and-play option. And I'm kind of surprised that the Colts did exactly what was expected of them. I kind of talked myself out of it and then back into it and then out of it again by the end of the night. And I'm just kind of stuck in the middle on this Tyler Warren pick right now.
Yeah, you know, really, if the Colts really were head over heels, you know, or if they were over for Loveland and kind of took Warren because they think they have to, then it ends up being the wrong pick, because then they won't really be invested in trying to find ways to maximize, you know, his potential and obviously playmaking ability. Yeah, I look at it like this. Like, at first I was like, man, you know, like, Chicago, you know, Warren's, you know, more of an NFC style, you know, like a Mike Ditka type, that, you know, that's who they should have picked. But then I thought Loveland is more of an AFC style, more passing, right? But then I started to think about it. Loveland is what Caleb Williams needs, a guy that can run really, really good routes, a plug-and-play guy. You don't have to run a lot of gimmicks because they have too many weapons, you know, with Allen and all the receivers. Adunze, you know, that they picked last year, that, you know, he needs to be, you know, in a certain place and run timing routes, and he's a big target at 6'6", you know, 245. Then I look at Warren, you know, I look at it like, okay, well, if I can, you know, this is his deal now. You got a tight end and a quarterback that essentially both of them are two the same size, 6'4", 245, and both of them are superior athletes. This is actually a good safety net for Richardson, potentially, and obviously Daniel Jones as well, because he's a big target. You can run RPO with both of them. He can get open in short area, and you don't have to use him as an inline hand in the dirt tight end, because him on the move allows you to accelerate his learning process. So I like it. Now, the caveat to that, Austin, if Indy was so in love with Loveland that you didn't want to pick Warren, I would have been okay with it, because you still got the likes of Mason Taylor and a plethora of other tight ends that I feel like that will be day one starters or co-starters, you know, in the second round. But I think Warren will work out. I think it's a good city for him. You know, I think Michigan has a ton of alumni in Chicago. So I think it'll work out for both teams, but ultimately a lot depends on what they do offensively to accelerate Richardson and Warren's combination.
I appreciate you talking me back into it, Jay. I am full speed ahead on the next Colts tight end wearing number 44. So I really appreciate that. We'll let you get back to the road. Safe travels. We'll see you again soon. Thanks for chatting, Jay. Appreciate it.
All right, dude. I'll talk to you.
That's Jay Foreman, one of the hosts of Old School here with Foreman and Orman. Jay was with us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. That's where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart. Let's talk some Royals baseball. Why don't we? Royals have started a series with the Houston Astros tonight after a big day by Salvador Perez yesterday. We'll chat some Royals baseball and more before we get you set up for the corner three here on the ticket.
You're listening to Old School with Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.